You're listening to The Lower Light. Episode 4. Flicker. Audio file for artifact 1945S57, part of our World War II exhibition. Laurie Caston, head curator, recording. Date of recording, the 8th of June, 2019. Artifact 1945S57 is a light bulb from a Berlin house, dating to the 3rd of May, 1945. It's unlikely we'll ever be able to work out which house it came from, given the state of the city after two waves of Soviet invasion. But what we do know is that the light bulb was taken by an ex-Red Army soldier, Natasia Kirillovna Mayakovskaya. It came to England when she did, in 1940. She donated it to my predecessor in person, on the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Berlin. Natasia was a tank gunner in the 47th Army, under General Zhukov. When the race to Berlin began, she was washed along with the rest of the army on a wave of patriotism and pride. Zhukov's pride, mostly. The generals were nothing if not competitive. Perhaps that's why, when they ground to a halt at the Silo Heights, tank after tank was hurled at the fortifications like battering rams. Never mind the burnt-out hulks of their compatriots. Never mind the tightness in Natasia's throat as another one of her comrades didn't return. The prize of Berlin's surrender, glitteringly close, drove them on. It took 3 days, but they finally broke through, flooding into Berlin. Natasia's crew of four, Anton Viktorovich Semerikov, Timofey Damilovich Orshavin, and Vasily Yegorovich Zurov and her, were crammed into a T-34 tank, trundling through the city. Everywhere they looked, they saw destruction. Bombed out houses like gaping maws in the street front, rubble strewn across the roads, bright eyes blinking out from every alley and intact doorway. It was those silent eyes that unnerved Natasia far more than the street fighters. The last defenders of Berlin would have their blood, though, and the tanks were vulnerable. There were black-eyed ghosts hunkered down in those buildings with their bazookas. All she heard was the whistle, her commander's shout, before the explosion ripped through the tank. Fire consumed the metal shell with a hungry fury, trapping them. Smoke clogged her lungs, burning. It became a desperate struggle, body over body, feet in faces, hands scrabbling at red-hot metal, to escape. Natasia closed her eyes, fingers closing around the escape hatch, and pulled. She dared not open them until she gasped in her first breath of smokeless air. Rolling onto the asphalt, she was free. The rest of her crew weren't so lucky. Some of them hadn't even had time to scream. She didn't have time to grieve. Dazed, she pulled herself to her feet and stumbled onwards, looking for the sight of a familiar uniform. Up ahead, she spotted a small group of infantrymen, bedraggled and staggering. One of them was clearly injured, drooping between two of his comrades. When she got closer, she saw the blood seeping through the side of his coat. The one that looked vaguely in charge called out to her. She hurried over. According to his estimates, they were completely separated from the main body of the army. The sun was already dipping below the horizon, and the wounded soldier wasn't in any state to be moved. He had already decided to shelter in the only house on the street that looked somewhat structurally integral. Behind its red, peeling door, they stepped into a small hallway. Evidently it had once had pictures on the walls, but the only traces of them that remained were nails and faded spots the sun hadn't seen in years. Somehow the lights were still on. Beyond the hall was a kitchen. Here the soldiers decided to settle once they cleared the carnage of a broken dining table and a flood of pots, pans, utensils spilling from the cupboards. Someone started rifling through their pack to find some rations. Someone else started fiddling with the apparently broken radio on the mantelpiece. Natasia went to sit next to the wounded man, who was staring numbly at his boots, shivering. He wasn't a man, it turned out. His name was Mikhail Yosifovich Amaliev, and he was only 17. Sweet and nervy as a foal, his hands were shaking as they picked at the unraveled sleeve of his coat. They made meaningless, gentle conversation as the other soldiers moved around them, murmuring. Slowly, Natasia noticed that the light was flickering. Barely at first, just a hum in her vision. Then it grew and grew into a whining, blinking static. Along with it, she could hear Mikhail's breathing picking up, collapsing into desperate, panicked heaves. His nails were bitten to the quick and bleeding. "Are you all right?" she asked. He seemed to start at her voice, blinking. "I need to get out," he murmured feverishly. "I need to leave." "We can't," Natasia tried to say, reaching out to touch his arm. He could barely walk after all, but he shrugged her off. "Need to leave," he kept repeating. He stumbled to his feet before Natasia could stop him and began staggering. No, walking, half running deeper into the house. After that, an uneasy silence reigned. Natasia just stared at the grandfather clock, watching the hands tick by. The minutes melted together, one becoming two, becoming five, becoming 10. Uneasiness settled in her stomach, a dead weight. 10 minutes became 15. The light still flickered. "I'm going to look for him," Natasia said, to no one in particular. She stood despite how much her body ached and headed deeper into the house. The rest of it was just as much of a wreck. Furniture was scattered across the rooms, vases smashed, drawers hanging out and rifled through. The carpet had been torn up in places, bearing the skeleton of planks beneath. Wallpaper was hanging from the walls in strips, lampshades twisted jauntily. Natasia called out for Mikhail. She thought she heard his voice in reply, distant from further into the house. Briefly, she wondered just how much further. It was one room after another, each as shattered as the one before. Always, Mikhail's voice was out of reach. Unease began to creep its way up her spine, becoming an insistent thrum of dread. She started running. Perhaps if she just ran fast enough, she'd catch up and find him in the next room. Eventually, she came to a dark room. Fumbling for the light switch, it clicked emptily. In the darkness, Mikhail's voice sounded far too close. His breath should have been tickling her cheek, yet when she reached out, all she could feel was thin air. Everything in her was screaming out to turn and run. She tried the light switch again, but nothing happened. The longer Natasia stared into the darkness, the more she thought she could see things in it. Eyes glowing, blinking. Mouths gaping like the bombed out buildings crowded with teeth. Mikhail's voice was beginning to twist, becoming pained. Her own heart twisted when it became a scream. A scream of pure, desperate agony. And then, silence. She needed to leave. Whatever this was, the glowing mouths were coming closer, dripping hungrily. Yet, her feet were fixed to the spot. No matter how hard she tried, fear churning in her stomach, she couldn't move. In desperation, she reached for the light switch once more. It seemed like the only thing she could do, but The light clicked on in a flash of static that sent a burst of pain through her head. The room was a dead end, and completely, utterly empty. She didn't know what came over her. Her heart was dancing a rhythm of terror and anger in her ears, body moving almost independently. Pulling up a dust-covered chair, reaching for the light bulb, it was red-hot to the touch, burning her skin like the metal of her tank. Natasia! Mikhail's voice echoed once more, thin and pleading. Natasia, please, don't! Her hand hovered. He's not real, she thought, clinging to that truth. He's not real. You have no right to use his voice. Never mind that she didn't know who you was. Wrapping her hand in her jacket, she reached up again, unscrewing the light bulb. Mikhail's voice screamed in her ears. She kept going, the heat of anger bubbling up in her chest. Even once she had unscrewed it completely, the light bulb still glowed, bright through the thin fabric of her jacket. She could barely hold it. Clutching it to her chest, she was filled with desperate, shrieking anger. Mikhail's voice, kill them all, burn them all. Burn it all down. Her head spun with it. Her stomach churned with it. She needed to get out. She could hardly walk, stumbling back through the house, not daring to look the others in the eye, answer their questions in case that monstrous anger boiled over. Hardly daring to breathe until she broke through the door and gasped in a breath of cold night air. For a moment, she teetered there. Until all the frantic energy bled out of her and she sat, numbly, on the front step of the house. The night was dark. The light bulb, the thing, in her lap pulsed sluggishly. With it, her anger ebbed and flowed. The last echoes of Mikhail's voice swirled around her mind, sobbing. 17, she thought. He was 17. Just a boy. Younger than the sister she left in Petrograd. It was a strange thing, grieving for someone she hardly knew. Cold and aching, leaving a bitter taste in her mouth with every swallow. And all the time she hated everything and everyone. Looking down at the light bulb, she forced all that hate into a roiling wave, trying to force it back down her throat. Whatever it was, it had no right to Mikhail. It had no right to her, to any of them. She hugged it tighter, feeling the heat burrow deeper into her stomach, cold pulling at her shoulders. Above her, the sky was a sickly yellow, pulsing with far-off explosions. You and I are going to have a long time to get to know each other, she thought. As the last gasp of Mikhail's voice faded. End recording. Whatever was in that light bulb, vestiges of it have stuck around. That or something else has been monkeying around with the lights in the artifact storage room. Either way, I've found it's not a good idea to leave it on display for too long. It can have some unfortunate side effects. I do wonder how she got it out, though. The Lower Light is a gothic supernatural podcast. Our intro and outro music is The Lower Lights by David Coffin. If you enjoyed the podcast, please consider subscribing and leaving us a review, or going to ko-fi.com/thelowerlight to buy us a coffee and keep the podcast going. If you'd like to get in touch, please email thelowerlightpodcast@gmail.com or head to thelowerlight.card.co. That's card with two R's for more information and transcripts. Until next week, may you have fair seas and following winds.